You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
I'm supposed to say a thing here.
You don't have to, but you can.
I feel like I need to. I feel like that's the pattern of a thing.
You need to, like, come up with a series of jokes.
The thing is, you getting to say the name of the show means I'm forced to come up with something clever every time, and I'm just not that clever.
Try harder.
Let's do a podcast. Sorry.
Today we're going to be talking about the fifth and final serial of the 11th season of Doctor Who, Planet of the Spiders.
Spiders.
Which consists of six episodes that aired from May 4th, 1974 to June 8th, 1974.
True facts!
And I'd like to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for getting these episodes for us.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Today, we have a new guest.
Ooh, exciting.
Yep. Maybe I should introduce him?
Nah.
All right.
Okay, do it.
Okay. Nathan Laws from the 42 cast is here.
Yay, everybody clap. Woo!
Hi, it's Rassel Awesome for you to have me.
It sure is.
Oh, no, now you have to leave.
Still not a fan of it, Tony?
I'll allow it. I've grown to tolerate it.
That's all I can ask for. So, how you doing?
I am doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah. It's been a nice weekend.
Yeah. A little sad because of what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
End of an era. Well, pretty good. Okay, so tell us a little bit about the 42 cast and what that's all about.
Oh, okay, well, the 42 cast is your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. And that is my not-so-clever pun on the Hitchhiker's Guide for the Galaxy, in which the number 42 is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. So, But basically what it is every episode it is a new cast of people that are interested in a various topic, which is also somewhat random but has to do with something geeky. We cover TV, movies, video games, books, kind of run the whole gamut of media. Yeah, we just sit around talking about it and have a good time.
I've been involved in a couple of those. It's been fun.
Yes, you have. Although this episode will probably go out before either of those ones do.
We'll have been involved.
Right. I have a backlog right now that I am trying to get through. So hopefully I'll be all caught up by the summer. That's my plan.
I wish you luck.
Well, thank you.
Let's see, what two did I do? I did The Inhumans and The Runaways, both Marvel TV shows of various different
goodnesses. I still have a lot of Runaways feelings. Yeah. I don't know why you made me read the comics. I'm really mad.
She found out a thing that does not make her happy.
Yeah, that's the thing I found out about on Wikipedia, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes! And I don't want this knowledge. I wish I could take it back.
Yes, I know it's the same way. I couldn't believe that Wikipedia was just like, oh, here's this thing about this person. And I'm like, oh, so, yeah, no spoiler warnings or anything. Thanks.
The internet's the worst.
Well, you did it to me on purpose. That wasn't the internet. That was you.
I didn't spoil you, though. I mean, okay, like,
I read the comic, so now I have the same knowledge as everybody else who read the comics and is also watching the show. But it's terrible. It's terrible knowledge, and I want nothing to do with it.
The only thing that I can say is that since they're obviously going a different route with some things, that maybe they're going to change that too. I'm hoping that maybe that won't happen, but I figure it probably will.
Yeah, I figure it'll happen in some way or another.
Yeah.
They'll probably do at least something with it.
Well, I'll stop talking about it since we can't straight up talk about it anyway.
Well, that was the problem in the podcast. We kept saying, you know, the thing, because the other two people on with us didn't know. And we're like, we can't spoil you on this, so.
We can only talk about the thing. I have this theory. A friend of ours was watching The Good Place and was like, I'm three episodes into The Good Place. I have thoughts. I need to tell you them all. and, like, sent us all of his theories, some of which were, like, really close to what was going on, some of which were off, but I was like, this is fun. It's fun to watch someone else be like, what is happening when you have all the knowledge? And I was like, we should all watch TV in rounds. So they're like, I'm a season ahead of somebody. And they're like, okay, here's what's happening. Here's what I think is going to happen. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, you small child. You just wait. Like, someone should always be an episode ahead of you and you tell them your theories. And then, like, there's somebody else who's, like, another couple episodes behind you. So it's like it's a round.
I sort of did that.
Everyone gets to feel a little bit superior.
In my single days, I used to do that all the time when I had lots of time to, you know, watch stuff. And I would just have friends over and I'd be like, I've already seen this, but you need to see this too. And so I just watch reactions and, you know, just be like, I'd love to hear people's theories about what was going to happen when I know, like, oh, I know how this whole series plays out. So
that was kind of fun for us. With your whole Yates thing.
Oh, yeah.
We had people, friends of the podcast, who were like, just wait. Stuff is going to happen with Yates, and Joe's going to have a meltdown.
And I did. And it continued into this serial. But before we get to Planet of the Spiders, there is something we do with every new guest. We want to know, how much Doctor Who have you been exposed to?
I have been watching Doctor Who since I was 5 years old. I'm now 38. I have seen everything. I've seen reconstructions of the ones that don't exist. I read the novelizations of all the ones that don't exist. When I was a kid, I just read every Doctor Who book I could find. I've read all of the original novels. I've listened to a lot of Big Finish, although not all. For the new series, I only watched the first 4 seasons because it's just not for me. So I've kind of, petered out there, but I still get my Doctor Who fix through Big Finish. So I still, you know, get new content. So that makes me happy.
So you know nothing about 11 on, I guess, or?
Yeah, I mean, little bits and pieces that I get from the internet and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that's it.
All right. So did we already do it?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's talk about this thing.
All right. Let's talk about Planet of the Spiders, episode 1, which I have called The Invisible Tractor.
And I'm just curious because I've only started listening to your podcast recently, so I'm way far back. Now that the serials don't have individual episode titles, do you do this all the time? Give them?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was really mad when they stopped having titles. He's like, I can't have that.
I love it.
Yeah, I've been doing it for all of them. So, to varying degrees of success.
Well, it makes just as much sense as a lot of those Hartnell titles did, where it was like, this is a thing that happened like for 2 seconds in the episode, and you named the whole episode about it. So, yeah, I like that, The Invisible Tractor.
Well, I mean, that's almost this serial, because this serial is Planet of the Spiders, and for a while there, I'm like,
Are there going to be spiders?
Is there going to be a planet of said spiders?
Are we going to leave Earth?
Is Earth the planet of the spiders?
You were very impatient to get to the spiders.
Was it Earth all along?
You animals, you blew it up.
But this episode opens with Yates.
Yeah.
I was very surprised. I thought we'd never see him again.
I did too. And I don't think we do after this.
No, you will never see Yates again. What had happened is Richard Franklin, who played Yates, wanted out of the show because he wanted to move to directing. So they thought, hey, we'll write him out because it would be, you know, we need a traitor in this one story, so we'll just make that guy Yates. But then they felt, you know, can we just have you back for one? Because, you know, people don't really like that. You know, that you turn into a traitor. So we'll give you kind of a redemption story. So that's why he comes back for this.
The whole time, by the way, in the serial, I was bugging Joe. I was like, how do you feel about Yates now? He's redeeming himself. How do you feel about Yates now?
He's still not Benton.
He's still not Benton, for sure. And he doesn't like, I don't feel like he does like full on redemption thing. He's just kind of in this story more than he's like.
Doing good.
He's doing good. But I mean, I don't think he does anything that's like super, super, super dramatic.
Redemption. I just kept turning to Joe and going, sometimes Yates? Sometimes?
Always Benton. Never Yates.
Sometimes Yates?
Maybe. But yeah, Yates is here looking at some cows.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
And he seems more interested in these cows then the Doctor and the Brig seem interested in whatever it is they're looking at.
They're watching some sort of show. There's like a comedian and a magician, and at some point, I believe it's in... You don't see any of this, by the way.
Yeah, they couldn't afford this.
Right. You just see their reaction.
I think it's belly dancers is when, like, the Brig's attention starts to really perk up.
Yes, I love that. And then when the Doctor calls him on, he's like, oh, no, the muscle control. I think we should adapt some of these exercises for the men. It's like, really? Okay.
I just like before that, there's like this terrible guy talking about, oh, he ran the streets naked and he didn't say Eureka. He said, I'm a streaker. The Brig gives the Doctor this face just like, I can't believe you dragged me here. And I've seen that face of many people who I've made watch movies that they don't like. Trust me, it gets better, I promise.
Did you feel like the cutting in between the Doctor and the Brigadier and Yates and Sarah got, like, really awkward? Because it felt like it was just, like, constantly intercutting between them, like, every 5 seconds, and it was like, I don't have a through line with either of these things, so it's mildly annoying to constantly jump back and forth.
I felt weird that, like, Sarah Jane was just so ready to, like, hang out with Yates alone after this whole big, I pointed a gun at you incident.
I mean, it happens. Who hasn't pointed a gun at a friend?
Yeah, he told her there'd be a good story, and suddenly she was like, hey, I'm okay with you.
She gets in a car with him, drives away very fast, and he still won't say what it's about.
It's implied that he's been doing some work on himself.
And yet he still found another cult.
To be fair, I've got a friend like that, who will just sort of disappear for a little bit, and they're, like, into something else, and you're like, oh, honey, why did you order the, like, Scientology starter kit? Come on now. And then they get out of that, and then, like, all of a sudden they're selling essential oils next thing, and it's just...
It just keeps happening. Yeah.
It's just one thing after another with them. They just need something. Yates is that friend.
I've got to say, though, I kind of like the whole arc with Yates, because first he's brainwashed in the Green Death, right? You know, boss, you know, controls him. You know, the Doctor breaks that control from him, and he kind of gets off on this bent of going with these people who are like, hey, you know, all these industries that are polluting the world are bad. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I think they are, because they brainwashed me. And he gets into that whole thing. You know, so you sort of see, like, the mindset that could get him down that path. You know, once he's exposed, basically, and has to leave, he's just kind of left with nothing, and he's just got to start from the ground up again. So I feel like the Yates storyline is kind of like the seeds of the kind of television we have now, where there are actual character arcs, you know? And I really like that. I like that he has a direction that he goes, and it kind of makes sense how he's going through it. And you know, even though we joke about it being a cult, back in the 70s, a lot of people were getting into Buddhism, so it's not as weird as it might seem to us now that they're doing this. I mean, it was more common.
Yeah, well, and the shitty thing is he's just going like, meditation, fine, that's the thing. That's like the thing people are doing right now when they want to clear their head. That's clearly what I gotta do. I gotta sort through some shit, and just gets tangled up in another thing.
Right, you gotta think of all the people who are practicing meditation, he happens to go to the one place where there's the people who are like calling upon dark powers and whatnot.
I just can't live my life.
That's what happens too, is he's going into the basement of the place, and he hears them all chanting and stuff, and there's this like carpet that starts glowing. Before anything appears, he bumps into a spider web and has to run out of there before they catch him.
Right, that scene was very Runaways. I was like, oh, this reminds me of Runaways.
But I was like, is that the spider? Is this the spider? But that was just a regular spider.
That was just some setup. That was just to whet your spider appetite.
But that's why he goes to Sarah Jane to be like, hey, there's spooky stuff going on. I don't want to get too involved. You figure it out.
The other thing that I liked in this one is how everybody's got, like, super long hair. Like, even the Brigadier. We're not even going to try to go for a military cut anymore. It's like everybody's got their 70s hair, you know?
Like, the very first, like, the first couple of minutes of this episode, I was like, why is everybody's hair so long? And Chris, who watched it with us, was making fun of me. He was like, hair grows. And I was like, but it's so long. Like, and it's everyone.
Right. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, in the military, they have rules about that kind of thing.
I also have, I'm weird about haircuts. Like, if somebody goes and gets their hair cut, I'm, like, weird for a whole week until I'm used to it again. So, like, when we got to this episode, I was like, ah, everybody looks slightly different. No. I'm over it now. I've acclimated.
You had 6 episodes.
Yeah. To get a handle on it.
But the Brig and the Doctor, they basically talk to someone who was in the show who was a magician clairvoyant. And he's the clairvoyant's like, oh, you know, it's all just fakes and jokes and giggles and it's not real.
Jokes and
he's like, please, please keep my secret. And the doctor's like, I will keep your secret that you're actually a real clairvoyant.
I love the way that he just says that. You are actually the most powerful, you know, clairvoyant I have ever met or something like that.
And the only reason why is I think he's like, you were slipping. You answered the question before your assistant could tip you off. I guess he had like a assistant to give him hand signals or something just to shy people away from thinking he was
Which
actually
is a
real.
Terrible way to, I guess, no, actually, I guess it's pretty good. Pretending to be a clairvoyant is a pretty good way to hide that you're a clairvoyant. I can't tell if that's terrible or great.
Right. Who believes that someone in a cheap variety act would really be a psychic, you know? I mean, just like, oh, it's just a show, you know?
And he can also move dinner trays with his mind.
Yeah.
Which he does.
And the Brigadier's eyes, like, his eye line is like 3 feet above where the thing is.
I also like how at the beginning of it, because he's like, you want to like hire me out for your military base or whatever, and I'll do a show there. And the Brig's like, oh dear God, no. But then once he moves the tray with his mind, Brig's like, you should put that in your act. That was amazing.
He's changed his mind a little bit.
But he wants...
The doctor's going to help him.
Yeah, because it hurts him. When he moves stuff, it hurts his head and stuff.
He doesn't do a great job. No. That guy gets dead.
That dude does die. Also, let's get this out of the way real quick.
Okie doke, let's do it. Let's talk about it.
We start meeting other people at the, I guess, the monastery.
Yeah.
We meet the guy who's eventually going to be our villain, whose name is, what, Lupton? And we also meet the sort of, I guess, spiritual leader, I suppose. I forget his name.
Well, Choji is the assistant.
Yeah, that's the guy I'm talking about, Choji. Choji, who is... very unfortunately in yellow face.
Yeah.
And also, I'm not entirely sure why.
It's Tibetan. But yeah, I mean, it's unnecessary. Like, obviously, we would say that it was unnecessary. Because
it's actually, in a way, almost double yellow face. Because of a twist we'll find out way later.
Because of things that happen later.
Because yeah. He's doubly not Tibetan.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this comes up from time to time in Doctor Who. I can't say that I really know too much about the acting scene in England at the time to know if they had a lot of diverse actors to choose from. But yeah, it seems like this happens quite a bit.
I'm struggling to remember something that I read ages ago that, like, there's like a certain actors union that, like, they just didn't want to work with. There was a fact that I had read specifically about this, and it's gone now. Gone from my memory forever.
I would just not write those types of characters if you didn't have access to them.
If you didn't have them to play the roles. Yeah. We're not out of it yet. We haven't gotten to like the worst bit.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. At the times that it was not, at the time people, I don't think it was accepted by the culture of the time. They didn't think they were doing something wrong. So yes, nowadays we definitely wouldn't do that. And if someone did do it, you would be horrified.
I think it's important to point out, just because we are here today. Yeah. You know, it's hard to go back and watch these things and just sort of, for me, to like skate over them and be like, anyway, and like not bring it up, because we are living up here in the future. So you have to at least like address it. And I also think, like, by and large, the culture was like, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. But I have to say, there were probably a handful of people who were like, wait a minute. And like, really, what the difference is that like the culture at large has started listening to those people and being like, you know what, you're right. That's kind of shitty. Let's not do it anymore. So, I mean, like, and obviously you can't judge people for doing shitty things when they're not aware that they're shitty.
Yeah, doing things unintentionally, yeah.
Yeah, but there it is. We've addressed it.
And that's I figure that's the most we'll say about it until we get to the reveal. Then I'll go bring it up again. Well, speaking of slightly problematic stuff, there's also another character we meet whose name is Tommy, who is kind of a parody, or not a parody,
It's Flowers for Algernani.
Yeah. It's not a parody. It's sort of just a
straight up reference. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Tommy.
I like Tommy too, but there's definitely some problematic aspects of it. Because, well, I'm just going to go ahead and say whole arc is.
Yes.
He gets sort of there's a blue crystal that amps up his smartness, basically.
Yeah. He's obviously mentally handicapped at the beginning of the story. And then, yes, the blue crystal, expands his mind or something to that degree.
There's just one line that I think Sarah Jane says where she's like, "Tommy, you're normal now." And I was like, "Ooh, you can't be saying that."
But the best part is his reaction, which is, "I certainly hope not," which I love.
That is a great reaction to being told you're normal now. Like, no, thank you. I'll have no part of that, please.
Which, of course, he isn't, you know, because even though his intelligence is increased, he's like this pure person that's able to, you know, resist some of the stuff that's going on because of that. But anyway.
They even when did Flowers for Algernon come out? Was that?
No idea, man.
I'm assuming it's
I just read it once in lit class.
Because if it is a reference to that, there's also the thing of Tommy really liking flowers.
Pretty things.
Pretty things, yeah. Because that's the first thing he's like trying to show Lupton, this like, "Hey, I've got this flower," and like.
Yeah, but that even goes back to Of Mice and Men or other things where it's like the person who's mentally handicapped likes the pretty things and the soft things, and you know, it's childish. You know, they depict them as being childish people even though they're grown.
Mice and Men still makes me sad.
Well, this doesn't end like that, so.
Yeah. I was about to say, that is also the way that it doesn't, because in Flowers for Algernon, they regress.
Yeah.
But not in this. Tommy gets to go on with all of this new knowledge. But that's that's all the way in episode 6. So right now, Yates has basically picked up Sarah Jane and has taken her to the monastery. And because he's like, "I would go to unit with this, but I don't know if they take me."
Yeah, the holding the gun on everybody.
Sort of pulled a gun on everybody. Whatever. You know, that'll faux pas.
He's just afraid he'll see Benton again and Benton will hit him again.
Benton will kick his ass.
Mm.
Oh, man. I love Benton. I know you do. I know.
I think Benton is an official companion. That's what I feel like. He's traveled in the TARDIS.
Yes.
And he's cute. So. But on their way there, I don't know, Lupton has some suspicions. Lupton has some suspicions about Yates.
Well, yeah, because they hear the car. After they hear the noise while they're meditating, they run upstairs and they hear Yates. And they say Yates is the only one that has a car at the monastery. So he's suspicious that Yates saw them.
His midlife crisis convertible.
It's a very nice looking car. A speedy little red thing.
You wonder how he affords that at an army salary that he doesn't even get anymore.
He probably got some money from the whole Project Rebirth or whatever it was called.
Golden Age.
But him and Sarah Jane are driving, and suddenly there is a tractor in the middle of the road, and they swerve off the road, and the tractor is not there. That is where my title came from. I guess Lupton made it exist with his mind?
Yeah, because they show them meditating, and they cut between that and them seeing the tractor. You're given to believe that they created some illusion, you know, drive them off the road, but it didn't really do much. It just drove them off the road. It didn't kill them or anything. So.
Also, do they use this ability any after that?
No.
That seems like a little waste of time. I would be using that constantly. I'd just be throwing illusions at everyone.
You would just make your, illusions that you're working while actually you're taking naps.
Yes.
Watching movies.
Yeah, I'm hard at work.
You could just make the apartment look clean, or make people think the apartment is clean.
But then you'd have to be chanting, constantly while the people are there at the apartment, so they'd start wondering what's up. Why do you keep going,
Please take a seat. Would you like a drink?
So it kind of breaks down on the practicality aspect.
What I need to do is hire someone to chant for me. Or just, set up a program to, chant on my computer.
There's an app for that. It's the meditation app.
The illusion chant app.
You don't even need to meditate anymore. You just have your phone do it for you.
I almost got it, but it's 99 cents.
It's 99 cents.
Okay, so back at Unit, they have put the magician, I don't know his name, but they put the magician in headphones. They're going to, like, listen to his brainwaves or whatever.
They're show him.
Yeah, they're going to show his brainwaves.
Yeah, he's got, the doctor's got a little machine that pops him right on up there.
Yeah, well, first it's just, like, waves, and then later we'll get, like, full-on visuals, because he pushes, like, this gigantic hairdresser thing, which Benton actually makes a joke about. He's like, ah, doing a bit of hairdressing on the side.
Which the brig is not having.
He's like, oh, I didn't see you there, sir.
But before that, they're testing to see how good he is at, like, being clairvoyant. The brig gives him his watch, and he starts telling where he got the watch, and it seems to involve a lady from his past. And when things start to get a little more risque, the brig just like, that's good, that's good, I believe you. We're done here.
Yeah, I love that. Anytime the Brigadier's embarrassed is like a wonderful scene, because he's so sincere in his embarrassment that he conveys, like, oh, no, I'm a Brigadier, I can't have, you know, that kind of stuff. You know? But I will say one thing, it's a very minor spoiler, because we will see the Brigadier continues throughout all of Classic Who. He eventually marries Doris, the woman from the story, so... And we do meet her.
Aww. I like just like that tiniest bit of personal information. And he's like, okay, shut it down.
My first name is Brigadier. I have no life outside of this.
But when Benton comes in, oh, actually before that, he does it with the Sonic as well. And that's when they move the big thing over and they can see, they just replay scenes from Carnival of Monsters with the Drashig.
Because Drashig, the Drashig looks cool.
Why didn't they bring back the Drashig?
Like, why do they just reference it a bunch?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe something happened to it.
Like, all we got is this old footage.
Maybe it looked great, but was a pain in the ass.
I don't know, and I don't know if we do again.
No, you'll never see the Drashigs again.
Sad. They are terrifying, and I love them.
I do, too.
I don't know, see, I thought it was kind of obvious they're hand puppets, and that's probably why they didn't use them again, is it's kind of an obvious prop.
The hand puppet head part. Sure, but the, like, when they're showing the bodies,
slithering.
Oh, you're right, and they get all that slime and everything on them, and gives them that nice, like, yeah, texture. Yeah, no, I agree.
I don't like it, but I like that I don't like it. It's a good, I don't
also,
like it.
Also, I think
it.
The hand puppet's cute.
Tony loves the cute monsters I on do. Doctor Who. She's waiting for them to bring the quarks back.
So since I haven't heard it, how do you feel about Agador from the Peladon stories?
Agador's just a big old puppy.
Yeah, I know. I love that. And I love that it loves the doctor. And it's like his pet. It
made me very sad that they killed Agador. It's old Yeller is what it is. You gotta do it.
Listen, I remember being in like grade school and I had to read some book and just ranting at whoever was standing next to me at the time. It was just like, I can't do it. If someone gives me one more assigned book to read with a dog in it, I will throw a fit. Because it's just gonna get dead. And I don't know why they keep doing it to me. You have to read the book where the dog dies? No, I won't do it. No more. No, and I, like, haven't read a book with a dog in it since.
Wow, that's quite traumatic.
What's that new one, that new movie that just came out? A Dog's Purpose? That one dies multiple times. It's the same dog, just keeps dying in some sort of messed up Groundhog Day situation.
Just remember being very young and like, this is emotional manipulation and I won't stand for it.
Just this once, the dog gets to live.
All dogs go to heaven. Dead right at the beginning. So anyway, Doctor Who.
Yeah, sorry. Rant over.
they look at the Drashigs on the TV after he's holding the Sonic. I always have, like, issues with that. They do that in stuff that's not science fiction, where, like, we figured out a way to just show your brainwaves on screen, and it's just, like, clearly just previous footage.
Why does that bother you?
Because that's not possible at all. Or they're like, hey, we're going to show your dreams.
Are you mad that it's not from their, like, point of view?
Yes, every time. It's always, like, some third person, well-edited.
It's, like, they're in the shot.
Yeah.
Well, but it's from the Sonic Screwdriver's point of view, so it's not supposed to be from the Doctor's point of view.
Oh, I guess that's true. That is actually something I liked from that Black Mirror episode, Crocodile, when they were doing the, like, pulling out their memories. It was all POV.
Yeah. Like, nice. That's the only good thing about that.
Yeah, I didn't care for that episode.
Anyway.
That's a different podcast. So
we gotta focus up.
Then Benton comes in.
Benton!
He has a package from Joe! Which I feel like, is this the first time we've sort of had, like, I mean, Joe didn't full-on come back, but is this the first time we've had, again, like, yeah, like, some sort of indication of what's happened to the companion?
A past companion?
Yeah.
As far as I remember, yes.
I want to say that when Liz left, because she left between seasons, they did talk about her the following episode.
Because they had to explain why she was gone.
But yeah, I think that otherwise, yeah, this is it.
And on this one, we also have the added, Joe gets to say stuff. I mean, through a letter, but she does get to say stuff. It's not just like, oh yeah, we kicked her out over the break. But yeah, there's a nice letter, which I thought was hilarious, because in the Green Death, she gets that, the doctor's like, look at this blue crystal I've got. And like, Joe's like, uh-huh, okay, that's real, I don't care. I was going to make out with this dude, and you barged in. And then at the end of the episode, he's like, here's a wedding gift. And she's like, oh, thank you, that blue crystal I don't care about.
And then in this one, she just sends it back. I mean, she gives a plot important reason why she sends it back.
Because the village or whatever she's at, like, doesn't like it. They're like, it's cursed or something.
Yeah, because even though she didn't really care about the crystal, she would have kept it as a memento of the doctor because of, you know, how much she loves the doctor and everything. But yeah, it's funny when you say it your way, Joe.
Oh, and she's also like, if you're not in, Brig, can you take care of it? And if Brig, you're away, maybe Yates or Precious Benton or something like that.
She says Precious Benton.
And like, Benton just like does the most cute like face. He's like, oh, she thought of me.
A little bit.
Her not realizing that Yates has become a traitor in the meantime.
Yeah, but the clairvoyant picks up the crystal and starts basically freaking out about it. Well, actually, before he held it in the package to see what it was. And he's like, it's from a long way away.
Yeah.
And the Briggs like, well, we know it's from a long way away.
It's a package.
From Joe. We already knew this. He's like, no, like, space and stuff. But yeah, then he actually touches it.
The doctor who's like, oh, this crystal is so powerful on Earth, he just leaves it on the table for the guy to grab. You know, while he's talking with the Brigadier and everything, they're not noticing that the guy's just grabbed the crystal and is staring at it. The doctor's pretty lazy about stuff like that.
Well, let's go back and talk a little bit. We skipped over a lot of, like, Sarah Jane Yates stuff. They've been sort of sneakily going around. He's been showing her the monastery. Well, not secretly so much, but she's had a talk with, I can't remember his name again.
Choji.
And finds out that the meditation can be dangerous, but, you know, they don't go to dangerous routes with it.
I like that that's like, when you turn up, like, things in your subconscious, like, you know, insecurities or, like, personal issues you've got. Not, like, giant spiders.
Well, because Sarah's still supposed to be, like, somewhat skeptical, even though she's been with the doctor. So she doesn't believe that it's going to, like, you know, do anything, like, super big, but just, like, hey, won't you, like, you know, kind of mess yourself up if you delve too deeply into this stuff or whatever. But, yeah, then we see giant spiders.
They have a talk with Lupton as well, who is obviously villainous. And then Yates tries to get Sarah Jane away, also being very obvious. He's like poking her and like, let's go. And oh, we had an accident. I don't know. He's just like, Sarah Jane's like, what is going on? You're being so sketchy, Yates.
Just calm down. I'm trying to have a lovely conversation.
But like, Yates is like, Lupton's on to me and us. And they peel out of there in his
convertible.
But then they just ditch it on the side of the road and like, we're going to sneak back. They'll think we have left. So now we can just go around sneakily and without them being on our trail.
He was trying to be obvious. I mean, he wasn't trying to conceal it to make them think he was terrified of them. So that they'd think, well, we don't have anything to worry about that guy because he's terrified of us. And so that's why he was just like, nah, now we can just like go back in and they won't suspect a thing.
It buys them a little bit of time.
Well, they sneak in the window and they are immediately caught by Tommy.
It's my favorite part of their plan is we're going to sneak in through the window like no one's going to notice that.
Just climbing up the side of the building. But yeah, they basically buy off Tommy. He notices Sarah Jane's got like a pin on and he's like, that's very shiny. And they're like, we're going to play a game called Secrets, where you keep our secret, and I will give you this pin, so you don't say anything. And he's like, yeah, that works for me. And then takes it off to his little Harry Potter room under the stairs.
I knew that was going to come up.
And Yates accuses Sarah Jane of using her feminine wiles on him.
Yeah, because, you know, she's a woman, so, you know, it gets too much, I think, in these 70s stories of the whole, like, because they always say, she's a woman journalist and stuff like that, where it's just like, man.
I mean, Sarah Jane just was kind of like, what? Like, excuse you, I just did a thing, like, while being a woman.
Literally, all she did was give a guy a pin.
It's very sexist while talking about being feminist. It's kind of weird dichotomy.
Oh, that happens a lot, I feel like.
The feminism episode of any TV show is going to be the most sexist. That's like a hard and fast rule of like TV, period.
Every time they're like, we're going to a planet that's nothing but women. And then there's always, it's just like, women are strong and great. And then also they just, it's just fails so hard. They should just stop doing that trope. I feel like every time they're like, we're going to do it, but do it right. And every time it's just
they
like,
do it wrong in the exact same way.
But anyway, they are going to go sneak around and go downstairs, and they're listening in on the chanting. They have this mat out on the floor, this little carpet thing that starts, it's like yoga mat for Buddhism.
No, that's not what it is at all, but okay, continue.
I don't pretend to understand Buddhism, but they refer to it as a mandala.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was a musical instrument for some reason. I don't know anything. Let's establish that right away. They start chanting. It starts glowing. Meanwhile, the magician is holding the crystal and starts freaking out. The whole room starts to shake and apparently tilts at a 45-degree angle. And there's papers flying everywhere. Everyone is acting like stuff is falling. And the doctor is reaching out trying to get the crystal away from the magician, and he does get it out of his hands, but the second it gets out of his hands, the magician just straight up dies. Back to the basement, and the chanting has conjured up a spider!
Spider!
A slightly larger than normal spider!
Okay, you seemed upset about
that. That's not slightly, okay? That thing is like 2 feet long.
You were like, it's not that big. And I was like, if you went into the bathroom and that was sitting on the toilet,
we'd move.
How big would you say that spider was?
That's a giant spider.
Well, okay, what do you want?
I was expecting a giant spider, like...
Well, you get that later.
That's true, we do. And I was very pleased.
I don't like 2-inch long spiders, let alone a 2-foot long spider. I think this is enough nightmare fuel. If they didn't look so obviously fake, I mean... It's the other problem, but
they almost their look legs like cute dogs.
They do.
There's an episode of Kim Possible. Ron Stoppable is afraid of bugs, but he gets roaches. There are like, for some reason, they are roaches that are huge, and he loves them. And Kim's like, I thought you were afraid of bugs, and he's like, but this size, they're just like ugly little dogs.
That's exactly how I felt about the maggots in The Green Death.
Of course, that is the same guy who has a pet naked mole rat, so.
I started off being grossed out by the maggots, but by the end of the series, I was like, I don't know, I could see keeping one as a pet.
That is an episode of Teen Titans.
You're just going to bust out all the cartoons from your childhood? But that's the end of episode one, is the semi-giant spider. And we are now into episode two, which I've called The Invisible Spider.
Okay.
Or.
I see a theme.
Or The Chase 2.
I love it.
Because I'm going to say it, this is the best, like, single episode of The Third Doctor. This just encapsulates The Third Doctor entirely.
This is one of the best episodes of Doctor Who. I'll just say it.
Jon Pertwee loved the action stuff. You know, he kind of envisioned himself as a James Bondish character. And so he loved all the vehicles and the chasing and stuff like that. And they were like, hey, since it's your last serial, just go to town. Like, we're going to give you, like, the biggest chase scene ever.
There was some point during this episode, I think it was before the car chase was over. Or no, after the car chase was over, but before the boat chase. That Joe was like, is this going to be the whole episode? And for the people watching it with us was like, oh man, maybe. Yes. Okay, yes, it is.
Before we get into the chase.
Okay. What do you need?
Well, let's go back and talk about the few things that do happen plot-wise before the chase starts. The spider is terrorizing people. Blue shocks somebody. Just shoots out little blue lasers.
I think it's supposed to be mental energy because of something that happens later.
Oh, that does make sense.
But it also can talk.
And it has the most adorable voice, too. Is it Alpha?
Yes, that one is Alpha. The queen is Kismet Delgado, who was the wife of the master.
Oh.
I mean, originally this serial was intended to have, not this specific serial, but the last serial of the season, was to have the Master in it.
And he died in a car accident. So, yeah, I think it was, you know, just to have, you know, her on, just to, you know, do, you know, something for her, since he was such a big part of the cast. I mean, that was one of the other reasons why John Pertwee left, is he felt like everybody was leaving, or in the fact of face of Roger Delgado, I mean, he died. And so it was like all his friends were gone, you know, from the show. So even though they're still going to be the Brigadier, it was like, so he kind of felt like with everybody else leaving, it was time for him to go.
That is sad. But yeah, the spider
jumps on, oh shoot, what's his name?
Lupton?
Jumps on his back.
And then disappears. Which invisible spider.
I assume was kind of the inspiration for Turn Left.
That's what I assume, yeah. Just a big bug on your back.
Which is really a terrifying thought.
Go around slapping people on the back when you meet them now, just to make sure.
Sorry, just checking for invisible spiders or beetles.
So the back at the unit base, the doctor hooks up the machine to the dead guy. He's like, we're going to play back his last memories just to see what was up. But they play it back and it's just spiders. Does he get any information from that other than spiders?
No, just spiders. Because then when Sarah's telling him about what she saw at the monastery later, she mentions spiders and then he starts paying attention.
The doctor is going to do something. I don't remember what it is. I just, in my notes, it says doctor is going to use thing. Very helpful pass, Joe. What an idiot. Benton says maybe he should go do it instead because he's expendable and the doctor isn't. And I was like, Benton, no.
You were so emotional right in that moment. Benton, you're not expendable. Benton, you're important.
He is. I just very, he should not be so down on himself. He should have more faith in himself.
Uh-huh.
Higher value is what I'm saying. He's great and he doesn't need to think of himself as expendable. This isn't Benton's last episode, is it?
No, Benton, you'll see him 3 more times, I think.
Oh, thank God. Woo! Okay, I'm good now. There's a great bit. Okay, so Lupton is talking to whoever his little henchman is. I don't remember his name. But he's like, can you still feel it? Or where is the spider? And he's like, it's still on me. And he's like, can you hear it? And it's like, yeah. And he's like, well, what is it saying? And then it like does a slow zoom in on Lupton's face. And then he just stands there for a second. And then the spider goes, this guy is stupid.
Make him go away.
Tell him to F off.
That's the funniest thing ever. And it's like, what's it saying? It's calling you a dumbass.
Which he doesn't say. He tries to be very cordial. He's saying, he's like, well, he's saying, maybe you should go check out something else in that other room. Okay, bye.
No, he actually tells him, it's saying that you look tired and should take a nap. So yeah, he's kind of diplomatic. He knows to filter.
But basically, we find out that the spider wants to find the crystal, the blue crystal.
Yes.
So that's why it's here. We also, back at unit base, Benton makes coffee. And it's apparently really good coffee. Because Benton is just, he has so many talents, you know?
Oh my gosh. The man's making coffee.
I know, but the doctor's like very impressed by it. Anyway, the doctor also talks about the old hermit from
mentions him in the Time Monster. He mentions him in Frontier in Space. I don't know. I just feel like the third doctor talks about the hermit like constantly.
But he basically just mentions it now to just
remind you
that in 4 episodes, it's going to be important.
I love those hermit stories. They go away after Pertwee goes away, and it's sad.
The one about the flower is really nice.
Where he's just basically trying to, you know, make Joe not feel so bad and worried. Oh, that was a really good thing. Diminishing returns, though, I'd say, a little bit.
On the hermit?
Old hermit stories, yeah. I feel like you can only go to that well so many times. Yates is trying to go upstairs at the monastery, and Tommy basically stops him and says he'll hit him if he goes upstairs because he's not allowed to go up there. So Yates tries to do the same thing that Sarah Jane did and is like, hey, you like this necklace that I've been wearing even though I've never worn a necklace before?
It was also at this cutaway that I noticed that the doctor was also wearing a necklace. And I was like, is that for the same reason? But I don't think it was.
No.
He was just wearing a necklace.
It's the 70s.
But it works. Tommy goes away, but then Yates is stopped by Lupton, so it didn't work.
When does the chase start, Joe? Get to the chase.
I'm getting there.
Cut to the chase.
So Sarah Jane has gone back to the doctor and is trying to fill him in on what's going on, but the doctor is just completely ignoring her in order to study the crystal and figure out what's going on with it. But yeah, then she says, spiders, and he perks up. He's like, well, that's where we're going. But Lupton has come because does he know that the crystal is there? Did he follow Sarah Jane?
I don't remember.
The spider can sense the crystal. I believe that's it, yeah.
Let's go with that. So he's tracking down the crystal. He doesn't have a pass, but he does have lightning fingers, so that works out for him. Lupton is basically the emperor.
It does kind of look like the Force Lightning.
It's blue and it's lightning-y.
Sure. So.
But apparently we find out, the doctor has figured out that the crystal can drive you sane.
Yeah.
Because they're like, did it drive him insane? He's like, no, it drives you sane. But basically it's like a very, it clarifies things.
It clears your mind, which is why he took it in the first place.
Right. Well, and that's why it was able to break Yates when Yates was brainwashed by Boss in the Green Death. Staring into the crystal broke that because it cleared his mind.
There's been a lot of like sequels to ideas in this series. Like we have the monster Peladon as a follow-up to Curse of Peladon. We've got the Return of the Hermit stuff. We've got the Return of the Blue Crystal.
There were the Daleks.
Yeah, there's a lot of like follow-up this season. But like, well, they're like, are the spiders from where the crystal's from? And he says they are not, but they are.
Metabilius 3.
Metabilius 3, yeah.
Because they're from farther in the future from when the doctor was there.
And you had a theory that maybe the doctor brought them there and they just super evolved?
Yeah, I was wrong. It was other people. But yeah. I was like, watch this all be his fault.
Right, but that was still, I mean, that's basically the idea of what happened and how spiders got there. You just, yeah, it just wasn't the doctor.
Just the doctor landed the TARDIS and hadn't been cleaning, so there was spiders all over.
It's funny, though, because, you know, it's like, they have the one story in the first Doctor's time when they carry diseases from one time to another, and then they never bring that up ever again. But yeah, the sort of idea of it.
And theoretically, it ought to be happening all the time. You know, like, you've got a cold and suddenly this other alien race is just dying.
Isn't that War of the Worlds?
It's true. It's the whole plot.
Benton gets attacked by Lupton, gets lightninged, which makes me sad. But he also, like, makes the crystal disappear from the office and into his hands.
Yes.
I mean, I guess it has to, because I saw that and I was like, wait a minute, why did you get that close just to do that? But I guess maybe he can only do that from close or something, but...
There's a limited range that that power works at.
So I'm like, you should have just stayed at the monastery and teleported it to your hand.
Well, that's something else that happens at the end of this episode. But then he gets it and he runs back, Benton's getting back up, and he punches Benton. Just stop hurting him.
Oh my god.
Brig tries to shoot at him as he's like running out of the building, but he gets into the Whomobile and takes off. It's at this point that it starts. They all get in Bessie and start chasing him down. Well, okay, they get into Bessie, but the doctor gets into this, I don't even know what it is, like helicopter plane thing. And flies into the air.
It's called a gyrocopter.
It's amazing, and I want to.
You're right, it's like a lightweight one-man helicopter. That yeah, it's again, it's something John Pertwee saw, and he said to the producer, "I want to have that in my chase. Can you talk to the owner and see if you'll let us use it in Doctor Who?" You know, you ask somebody, "Hey, do you want your like device to be in Doctor Who?" Of course, they're like, "Yeah, that'd be awesome." You know, great advertising. So yeah, that's the story.
I feel like it slows the chase down in order to be like Bessie is chasing the Whomobile and he stops to go get in this thing so he can keep an eye on it from above. I'm like, that's taking up precious time.
Yeah, but the important thing is that he got to be in a helicopter.
Now, do you guys realize that the Whomobile was a car that John Pertwee had commissioned?
Yes. It's amazing. And I'm pretty sure it's only in this and Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Yeah. They didn't get a whole lot of use out of it.
Oh, but I'm sure he drove it afterwards just for his own like, sake. So.
Okay, so we've got the Whomobile being chased by Bessie and the gyrocopter. And then a police car gets involved in the chase as well.
It felt very much like a Bond movie at that point.
It was like Cannonball Run, Doctor Who. It's fantastic.
I was thinking of Live and Let Die, but...
I think at like, Lupton, some
like,
point...
abandons...
The Whomobile.
The Whomobile. And they pull up, and then he's, like, hiding in the bushes, and they're looking for him. And then he runs and gets into the gyrocopter. And then he takes off, and the Doctor and Sarah Jane...
Get into the Whomobile,
which flies...
Yeah, the Brigadier's like, you'll never catch him. He's airborne, Doctor. And the Doctor's just like, you know, just watch.
Now, the car chase bit lasted,
Gyrocopter.
Yes, both lasted quite a bit. Now, at this point, we're a full airborne chase. This lasts quite a bit.
He has to land, too, because he's low on fuel.
And then there's a third thing.
Well, there's a foot chase for a little bit. But yeah, then he steals... was it a hoverboat? A hovercraft.
Okay. So good!
I just saw the documentary where the producer talks about this. He said he was going, because the producer was a sailor, and so he would go to the sailing shows. And he said that John Pertwee comes up to him and he's like, hey, there's this guy that's going to be at the sailing show who's like designed his own hovercraft. He's like, go ask him if we can use the hovercraft on Doctor Who. So again, it's John Pertwee just like, I love all these things and I want to drive them all. And, you know, it's part of the show. It'll be part of the show. So it'll be okay. This really is just like a monument to John Pertwee's love of devices and gadgets and vehicles.
So yeah, Lupton steals a boat. The Doctor takes the hovercraft.
Because...
And he drives over land. He doesn't even go immediately into the water. There's a bit where he like drives over this like homeless guy for like no reason.
Why is he there?
So the guy playing the homeless guy was John Pertwee's stunt double. So it was a way for him to be in an episode and you get to see his face for a few seconds. So.
Oh, nice. I always think that's great when people are protective of their stunt double and want to make sure they get their due.
I've definitely seen his stunt double's face before, but I don't think the show wanted me to. There's definitely times where I'm like, that is not John Pertwee.
Yeah, he hurt his back a couple of times in the last couple of seasons where the stunt double had to do some scenes where really he shouldn't have, because it's a little too obvious.
So the hovercraft and the boat are just, he's chasing the boat down in the hovercraft, and he jumps from the hovercraft into the boat.
Into the boat.
And then he disappears. Lupton could teleport away at any point in time.
But he needed the time to concentrate. So maybe that was the problem. He just didn't have the time to concentrate.
I guess. This entire episode was just an excuse for the chase. That's it.
It was beautiful. I loved it. It was a work of art.
I wouldn't have
changed a thing.
You didn't want him crashing the Whomobile, did you? If he had teleported while he was in the Whomobile, then, you know, that would have been problematic.
That's true.
Nothing was better than watching the Whomobile fly through the air. It was very satisfying.
Well, and I love that Sarah's like, well, now what are we going to do once we catch up to him? And he's like, he's running out of fuel, so now we just got to wait.
I could bump him a little, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, that would be awesome if, like, you know, in the car chases, when the cars bump into each other, if it's a flying thing, and it's just, like, bump into each other.
Oh, that would have been great. But that is the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called The Invisible Salesman.
Okay.
Because, yes, Lupton teleports out of there back to the monastery, which Tommy sees happen. The Lupton and the spider have a sort of discuss things. Basically, she's going to take him to the spider council on her planet. And she's like, clear your mind of all ambition so that the other spiders won't kill you. And then, like, they, like, have a conference with this spider council. And it's just his floating head.
I like the spider council. There's, like, this...
table?
Yes.
Why are they so high up?
They want to be tall.
They actually explained this in the documentary I watched. It's so that you could have the humans and the spiders in the same shot and it didn't look awkward when they're talking to each other.
That makes so much sense. I just thought they liked being fancy.
They just want to look down on people.
But I mean, like, I have a cat. I understand that, like, all she wants in the world is to be taller than everyone else. It's her main goal in life. I imagine the spiders are the same.
Well, the thing to me is it's only disappointing, and it's just because the cost and the issues of how to shoot it would have been much bigger, is that it really should have been webs that they're on, you know, instead of tables. I mean, it just seems kind of silly that they've got these with a little web pattern on it, you know? But it's a table.
The webs are there in aesthetics only.
Yeah, that probably would have been a bit difficult to shoot and everything if there were just webs everywhere that they were hanging on.
But it is revealed that the spiders, like the great one they refer to, wants to basically conquer and return to Earth.
Where they are originally from.
Yeah.
Right. And this is kind of my problem with this, is it's like, so you want to invade Earth, before your ancestors got to Metabolus 3. Do you see the problem there? I think that there's a problem with your plan.
That is an interesting question. Are they chanting and pulling spiders from the future?
Yes.
That's...
But when the spiders go back,
do the spiders have time travel?
Yeah, it's through the meditation. Because they talk about how they search for the crystal through time and space. So that there's time travel involved. Because remember, it's a human colony ship that brings them to Metabolus 3, so it's got to be the future.
I didn't even think about that until just now. So whenever they patch in to have the spider conference, they're patching into the future.
I didn't think about it really either. Hmm. It is a terrible paradox-causing plan.
It was doomed to fail from the beginning. Lupton's going to take a nap, and the spider jumps off his back, right?
That yeah, happens? That's basically it, yeah. Spider's like, I got shit to do.
It's a good thing he didn't lay down in his bed, you know, on his back.
Squish. But the doctor, Sarah Jane, and Yates all go, and they talk to...
Choji.
Choji?
Why are you having such trouble?
I'm going to write it down. I'm going to write it here. Choji. Okay. Basically, they're asking about Lupton. He's basically like, well, he was here. Like, he's here now. There's no way he could have. I mean, he'd have to be like a teleporter or something. But Lupton's henchman guy. He's not really a henchman. He's just like hangs around Lupton a lot.
To be honest, yeah, none of the other people around Lupton, even though they were all like chanting and trying to all had to be part of the plan, they all seem very confused that something actually happened and like upset and not cool with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you think about it, I mean, if you get a bunch of people around, you're like, hey, we're gonna dabble in magic, whatever, you know, people think it's just for fun, right? You know, they don't think it's really gonna happen. So I thought that was believable.
They all start backpedaling really fast. They're like, whoa, 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 you know what, never mind, can we just go back to the normal meditation thing? Like, that was better. There were no talking spiders.
Right, yeah. We don't want the big spiders anymore.
But he basically comes into Lupton's room and is like, hey, maybe you shouldn't be messing around with scary space spiders, maybe. Lupton just starts going, I was a great salesman. Just goes into like this big evil monologue about being a salesman. I don't even remember what it was. I was just like, why are you talking so much about being a salesman?
What it was that he's like, I was a salesman and I was great at it and I was doing good. And then one day they were just like, fuck you, and laid me off.
Yeah, I mean, there's very much throughout the entire Pertwee era, they've got this whole idea of the big business hurting the little guy, you know, all the problems that come from that. I mean, it's really topical even nowadays. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I like this, you know, this time period in Doctor Who. And, but yeah, so he basically just became, you know, obsessed with revenge or whatever, because he said that even when he tried to start his own business, they like came and shut him down. And so he's like, now I want to make them beg and make them feel what it's like to have nothing. And so he's got issues.
So future spiders. So while he's giving this big monologue, Tommy peeks in through the window and steals the crystal, and thus begins his journey into becoming smarter.
Through kleptomania.
That's the lesson. Steal stuff and it works out for you.
Go ahead, take that weird glowing crystal.
It can only help.
At this point in my life, that is probably true.
So then the spider comes back in and is all like, what are you guys talking about? The other guy's like, well, I'm gonna leave now. And it's like so casual and weird. Like, there's this weird talking spider on the floor and you're just walking around it to get out. I don't know. They're just all casually accepting this.
Well, I'm gonna go fix myself some lunch. Have fun with the spider.
What I think is great, when Lupton's talking to it mentally, it once again says, this guy is stupid, get rid of him. It's like, it becomes a running gag with the spider constantly telling Lupton to get rid of the other guy.
Oh, he just doesn't like that guy.
Poor henchman.
But the spider's like, heads up, the doctor is coming, so prepare. And he like puts up some resistance to it, and the spider just like goes, and he's like, oh no, my head, because they have a telepathic link, I guess. So
I'm sorry, what sound does the spider make?
The spider goes, but yeah, the spider can mentally hurt him.
Yes.
But because Lupton is a very great salesman.
Well, he's clever. Tommy said so.
Clever Lupton.
He can hurt the spider back. And the spider's like, I did not expect this.
Yeah, a link goes both ways.
I don't like this. I just like the one-way Herdy. Basically, he does not want to go to Metabilis 3 and be a slave, which is basically what she said they were going to do. And he's like, I'm not cool with that, but we can work together. And then she jumps back on his back, and they're going to take the crystal to the spiders. But the crystal's gone because Tommy is not actually going to keep this crystal. He wants to give it to Sarah Jane as a present, I guess, as repayment for the pen she gave him. She kind of brushes him off a little bit because, you know, there's other stuff going on. So she doesn't get the crystal. But if she'd just gotten the crystal, this all could have probably been handled a lot quicker. But basically, Lupton has this plan that they're going to bluff the spiders and say they've got the crystal, even though they don't have the crystal, which is sure to work out.
Seemed like a smart plan with creatures that can read your mind.
Oh, what happens is Sarah Jane, when she brushes him off, she's like, tell him to go get Yates.
Right, because she's going to go see what Tommy has, but then she sees that Lupton is being secretive and going down into the basement, and so she's going to follow, and she tells Tommy to get Yates.
And then she follows him, and he does. He meditates, and then Tommy tells Yates that Lupton is in the cellar. Lupton disappears in the cellar, and then Sarah Jane rushes over there and stands on that mandala?
Mandala, yep.
Got it. Nailed it. And she disappears as well and teleports into a blue screen.
I like that they did it from her point of view, because usually when you see teleportation, it's an external shot of the person fading away. Then you go to the new location and the person fades in, and you see it from Sarah's point of view with the doctor and Yates running towards her, and it fades from them running towards her to her being in the other place. I like that.
I don't know why, but my immediate thought when she like showed up in the new place, for some reason, very much visually reminded me of when Alec Baldwin's character goes to the sandworm place in Beetlejuice, when he like goes down the stairs and then suddenly he's on another planet. And just the way, I don't know, everything's so bright and deserty and stuff, just suddenly.
My question on this is, why do the spiders teleport Lupton to the middle of the desert instead of right into the building where they are?
It's just rude, I think.
It works a bit like the TARDIS, where it's just not quite where they want to be.
Because then, yeah, Sarah starts following Lupton because he's only like a few feet away from her, and he never notices that she's following him either. Okay.
And she doesn't get to follow him too much because she gets grabbed by villagers. This is when it sort of becomes like an older classic Who serial, I feel like. Like a more standard sort of, we're going to another planet and here's the villagers and we're going to meet the two.
Your least favorite two characters.
Yeah. Every serial has them and they're coming up soon. Sarah Jane's brought to the village and this guy wants to kill her because, I don't know.
He doesn't know her. She's new.
Yeah, he thinks that she's a spy sent from the Eight Legs.
And she actually says spider, and they're all like, oh, it's forbidden.
That is a forbidden word.
Can't say spider, that's offensive.
That's a slur.
They're just eight-legged.
Okay, so this guy that wants to kill Sarah Jane is one half of my least favorite duo in all of Doctor Who. Because you always have the brash young guy who's like, let's kill everything. And then the one leader who's like, no, let's talk it out and deal with it in a good way. And he's coming up later. But like, just, it's every serial. It's literally every serial. There's always this duo. Anyway, some horn sound, which I guess announces that spiders are coming, and they hide Sarah Jane. None of them are like, yeah, let's kill her. It's just that one guy.
He's got like his whole family who's like, will you chill out?
And the spider comes. They're like carrying her in this like pillow thing. There's got guards like carrying her around on a pillow. And they're basically saying that they want Eric?
Yes, Eric is the leader. Yep.
Either they get him or just any two-leg will do.
They gotta kill somebody. They're not super picky about who it is.
So it's either, if they don't give Eric, then they'll just take anyone.
Well, no, they actually say like one person from each family. And it's only when the dad says, please take me instead because I helped them escape, that they say, okay, we'll just take you then.
What happened was Eric struck a guard, punched him or something. Maybe it was a slap.
The guard was abusive. And so he hit the guard.
And then the spiders are basically like, why do you think we'd care? Don't explain things. We don't like any of you. Ugh, gross humans.
The other thing that I like about this, though, is that unlike most sci-fi and Doctor Who, where there's only like the one village or whatever, they talk about there being other villages. And they even say, like, there's this one village that was wiped out, you know, because they opposed the spiders and we don't want to be like them.
It's true. Yeah, it certainly is just one village and that's it. But they're going to take the old guy and eat him. That's what they're going to do. But in the midst of all this, the spider sees Sarah Jane. But then the Dr. TARDIS is right in the middle of all this and Sarah Jane sort of runs away and hides. Which is just, she puts on a coat.
My favorite part of all of this is, okay, they're talking about how they need Eric. You know, the villagers are like, tell, you know, Sarah, don't, you know, let them see or whatever. They're standing right in the doorway. So when the dad opens the door to come out, you see Eric and Sarah Jane in the doorway. And I'm like, how do you guys not see him? He's like, oh yeah, Eric's fled. I'm like, they just saw him through the door. He's not even standing like a little bit to the side or whatever. So you can't see. It's like, it's right there.
Hiding in plain sight.
That's the Doctor Who staple. Hiding in plain sight. But the Doctor arrives, briefly talks to the Queen. The Queen's like, eh, I don't like you. Which leads to the Doctor, you know, karateing people, which he is known to do. But then he gets zapped by this.
Yeah, the guard zaps him.
And that is the cliffhanger. That is the end of episode 3. And we are now into episode 4, which I have called The Web Planet 2.
These titles are great. I need a list of all your titles for all the serials. So it's going to be my new headcanon.
Nice. Some of them are really bad.
That's okay. I like really bad.
I think I might have even done the Web Planet 2 before. I don't remember.
I said Rassle Awesome when I came on your podcast. I'm okay with bad, all right?
I think you're actually the first guest to really enjoy Joe's titles. Most people groan at them.
We have another guest who just says, no, here's my better title.
Well, if I had known that you did that, I would have totally come on with my own titles.
We'll do it next time. We'll have a title off.
Yes, yes. I'm going to enjoy that.
And okay, so this episode, it's been doing something. I feel like it happened a lot in this third Doctor era. An incredibly long recap.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, this one was really bad with the recaps.
I think I timed it and it was at least 2 minutes, which is, that is so much.
That's a lot of airtime.
They must have been running a little short and they figured they had to pad out the episodes by doing longer recaps.
And they padded out an entire episode with a chase.
But they intended to do that.
Because, it starts back before he even talks to the Queen. Like, right when he TARDIS is in. Or, no, they don't leave with the Doctor. They just leave because the Doctor is apparently dead, maybe? They think he's dead, I guess. And they leave without Sarah Jane because they're like, oh, we don't see him. Because this whole village is like a Where's Waldo.
She's not hidden super well. She's just wearing a different coat.
Yeah, she's got like a scarf thing over her head.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because while the Doctor's fighting the guards and their attention is on him, the one girl gives her the shawl or whatever to put on. So it's completely disguised her.
She looks like a completely different person. But the Doctor isn't dead. He's just not doing great.
He's mostly dead.
Mostly dead, yeah.
I like that everyone's telling Sarah Jane that he's dead and she's like, no, you don't understand. He keeps doing this. He's very sturdy.
I thought he was dead twice last serial. It just happens. But he's dying, I guess. But meanwhile, back at the monastery, Yates is listening in on the Meditators.
That sounds like a Doctor Who villain, the Meditators.
This was one of the original titles for the serial was the Meditators.
The Meditators from Meditatross 3.
But they're, like, super worried about... I don't know, they seem, like, worried that they're gonna get in trouble.
They are like, what are we gonna do? But they haven't really done much?
Well, they think they're gonna be blamed for Lupton's death, because, like, Lupton disappeared, and it's like, you know, are we gonna get, like, pinned for his murder? Because we think he's dead now, because he's just gone.
But there's no evidence, so they'd be fine.
They've in no way been implicated, and they're, like, just convinced that they're gonna go down for his murder. They seemed very panicked, whereas I'd be like, okay, here's our story. Let's all get it straight now.
And then they hear Yates listening in, and then they open the door, but it's Tommy, and they just basically shoo him away, and then Yates goes back to spying. So Lupton goes to meet all the spiders and is like, I have the crystal. I'm not going to give it to you until we are rewarded. Because he's a good salesman. And the Queen mentions that he was followed by Sarah Jane, which he was completely oblivious to because he doesn't know how to look behind him.
You'd think the spider would have seen her because the spider's on his back and their eyes see all around. So
the spider should be your rear view. But then we go back to, this is when Tommy basically starts reading. and the crystal is humming, and he has a book that he starts reading it really well. And then he starts like reading other books.
Yeah, he has like an easy reader book, and then he moves on to the library. More difficult stuff.
And he's like reading poetry and
I really like that scene actually, where he reads a bit of poetry and he goes, "Oh, pretty."
Yeah, because even though his intelligence has expanded, he still has the naivete that he had.
So the doctor's not doing well, but he says that there is a machine in the TARDIS. And he gives Sarah Jane the TARDIS key, which I was excited to see. Is that the first time we've seen that TARDIS key?
Yes, it is.
When Tony and I first started dating, I was not super into Doctor Who at that point. I'd seen a little bit of the first Doctor and that was it. And I knew she was really big into Doctor Who. So I bought her two different TARDIS key necklaces, and this was one of them. This little sort of flat silver sort of...
The little shovel guy.
Yeah, with like a Z, etched in Z on it.
That's the one that I think most people think of as the TARDIS key. Because yeah, before this, I think it's just been a normal looking key.
She sneaks out to the TARDIS. She gets the satchel, but she's caught by Lupton? Taken away. Eric is going to go get the satchel because he thinks the doctor will be able to help them.
Yeah, I love this, by the way. So his dad just sacrificed himself so that Eric doesn't get taken away. He's already seen them grab the girl who walked out there. And he's just like, you know what? I believe her when she says this guy can help. I'm just going to go out there and risk getting captured myself. I was like, way to go. Way to make your father's sacrifice mean nothing.
I mean, that's basically what his mom says.
Look at what all your father's done for you, you ungrateful. But they get the machine to the doctor, whatever the machine is. I still am not entirely certain what it is. It's like a rejuvenator thing.
Sure.
It's the same thing he uses to block the spider's blasts. So I'm wondering if it, like, dissipates the mental energy that's killing him or whatever. That's the only thing I could come up with for it.
That works.
Yeah, it's a plot convenient device.
That we will never see again, nor have we seen before.
I think it has some blue sparks, and then he's fine. Sarah Jane is taken to a little web cell. There's a bunch of people webbed up, including Eric's father.
Who's just resigned to his fate.
He's like, well, nobody can beat the spider, so best just rest until we're eaten.
I like that they're all webbed up, but they also all have little web pillows.
You don't want your food's neck hurting. Meanwhile, Yates finally enters the meditator's room and is immediately knocked out by one of the more nervous people. And the other ones are like, what did you do that for?
Now we
really look bad.
No, there is evidence. Now we are implicated in something.
The doctor eats some soup with the colonists. And they give the backstory of how they all came here. They crashed 400 years ago. We get a cut back and forth between the colonist telling the doctor the backstory and also Eric's dad telling Sarah Jane the backstory while they're all webbed up, which they do that quite a bit. And I think it's always effective. I always like that. That's a good way to give out exposition, I think, is when you're just like cutting back and forth between two different people doing it. It's still the same amount of boring, but it feels not as boring.
I also especially love it when it's happening while people are eating.
Tony loves it when people are eating on TV.
I don't know why. It's just nice. They're all hanging out, having a good time. They're just having a moment before they have to, like, engage with the plot.
So would you have liked it if the spiders actually ate Eric's father?
You'd be like, oh, this is nice.
Like, if they all sat down and had a nice meal together. Okay.
Could you please pass the arm? I would like a leg.
So basically, yeah, crystals made the spiders evolve, and then they ruled over the humans. Because the humans didn't evolve. They weren't near the crystals, I guess.
Well, yeah, they said something about the crystals were on the mountain, and the spiders were on the mountain, and that's what happened. So I guess the humans moved down. Well, since they wanted to be farmers, I guess that makes sense. They moved to where it was, you know, flatland or whatever.
So the doctor's like, okay, cool story. Can you guys get me some pebbles? So they go to get them some pebbles. He starts testing them. Was it with the same machine?
Mm-hmm.
One thing has this property, then surely there's another thing that has the exact opposite property, and then they'll cancel each other out. Science! And he does. He finds a particularly nice rock. Also, Yates is all tied up now, if any of you guys are into that.
In the one guy's bedroom.
Just on his bed, all tied up.
The story took a dark turn.
50 Shades of Yates, that's...
The sad thing is I had the thought, and Joe said it 3 seconds before I did.
that's a big finish, probably.
I would make a joke about big finish, but it's going too far now.
We've completely derailed here.
The doctor sneaks into the spider lair. The guard starts shooting lightning at the doctor, but he blocks it with the thing. And Lupton is there, and he's like, kill that man. But they're like, actually, we don't like you very much. And they take him away. They take Lupton away. But they do take the doctor, but the doctor does some karate, but gets caught. They just wanted to put a little bit of karate in there.
And this is one of my favorite scenes.
He gets stopped and taken away. But, like, meanwhile, like, Sarah Jane has been telling Eric's father, like, you know, we shouldn't give up hope. That maybe the doctor will come save us. It'll be a fine. And then the doctor walks in. And she's like, doctor, you're here. And he's like, huh? Hold on one second. And then the guards come in behind him. He's like, sorry.
And that's the cliffhanger.
I actually love that.
I was like, I'm used to the cliffhangers having a little more punch than that.
Instead of it's like a punch line. Wah, wah, credits. And that was the end of episode 4. We are now into episode 5, which I've called Flowers for Tommy.
Aww.
I was running out of titles.
Ran out of invisibles?
The invisible title. So, the head spider, she's not the queen, is she? The great one's the queen. Or is she?
No, she's the queen, and then the great one is a separate entity, who is also a big-ass spider.
She wants to kill Lupton, because they found out he was lying about having the crystal. And he's like, well, no, it's not on the planet, sure, but it's because I hid it on Earth. Duh.
The fact that his spider friend didn't think of that was like, really? She's like, it's too bad, Lupton, we've been like found out. And he's like, why don't you think of this lie? You know, so obvious about it, but all the other spiders buy it.
Well, that spider is not as good of a salesman as Lupton is, so men and their sales.
You know, you get the feeling that Lupton was like a used car salesman. He talks about how he's just a great salesman, whatever, but doesn't say what. And it's just like, everything he says is a lie, so it's like, you're a used car salesman, aren't you?
I don't want to be stereotypical.
Uh-oh.
But every car salesman I've ever met has been the worst.
Right. And slept in.
Just slimy and ugh. The guy who sold us our car seemed okay, but I don't know him personally. He could be terrible in real life. Who knows?
He's probably slimy.
But the other spiders seem unsure about who they want to align themselves with at this point. They're like,
the queen's been challenged a lot. But they're like, the queen sucks. Maybe it's time to have a new queen. And everyone seems like pretty quick to jump on this. They're like, yeah, good point.
But then she's sort of like, hold on. I'm going to go talk to the great one. We're going to get this all sorted out. Figure out what's going on. And then Oh, something fell.
Check for giant spiders.
What if they're invisible?
Start slapping everything.
Okay, so, don't do that. Why would you do that? Tony started walking her hand slowly across my back. Terrible. Terrible person you are. But the doctor is about to get webbed up, and he seems really excited about it.
I really like the scene with him and Sarah Jane where he's trying to take her mind off of it by making the worst puns that he can possibly come up with about spiders and being eaten. And he's just punning away, and she goes from being, like, really despondent to just, like, laughing. And I thought that was really cute.
That was an adorable moment. I loved it.
Yeah, my note says, the doctor and Sarah Jane are giant nerds. But the doctor's like, don't worry too much. Like, I've given Eric and his people some rocks. So, basically what they do is they attach the rocks to their foreheads with, like, headbands. And that, like, protects them from mind wiggles. A guard comes in and cuts open Sarah Jane's thing.
Because the queen wants to talk to Sarah.
Sarah Jane has a little bit of trouble getting up because she's all pins and needles, which you would be if you were all cocooned. Doctors basically just yells out, try to slow him down, as she's being loud, taken away. And then the doctor just starts wiggling around in his cocoon and does what he does, which is name drop. And tries to do it in a way where it doesn't seem like he's name dropping.
What was that man's name? Harry Henderson? Hendrix? Noted with an H.
Houdini. And then he gets out of the cocoon, basically tells Eric's dad, I'll be back with a knife. And he's like, fine, I'm comfortable anyway. I got a spider pillow. That's all I need.
Hope they don't eat you before I come back. Bye.
Good luck. Sarah Jane is brought to the queen, and the queen basically is like, listen, what I really want is peace. I'm not into this whole be an evil thing.
And I love that Sarah's just like, oh, okay, that sounds great. You know, I'm like, really, Sarah? Really? You buying this?
What do you need me to do? I'll do it.
And the nice thing is you don't see what happens next, but you know what the queen's like? Just turn around. Expose your back. Thank you.
All I need is one quick piggyback ride.
But, okay, so back to Yates. The guy just lets Yates go. Like, I don't know why we were doing this. This is bad.
We're all really high strung. We have not been meditating as much as we're supposed to.
Yeah, because Yates tells him that he'll help them because they need 5 people for the circle, and that he'll help them to create another portal so that Lupton can come back.
Which is not going to be the best thing that happens. But he wants to help because he wants Sarah Jane back. The spider and Lupton have a small little domestic feud. They start hurting each other's brains a bit. They don't have a very healthy relationship. Tommy is sort of figuring out the plot a bit. He wants to talk to Yates about stuff, but he hears that they're going into the cellar, and he starts to remember that Lupton was going to the cellar and Sarah Jane telling him to tell Yates and all that stuff. So he's going to go talk to Joe Chi about it. Did I get his name right that time?
Well, you got it backwards. It's Choji.
Damn, yeah, you did.
Choji. Oh, I'll get there. The doctor goes around trying to find Sarah, and he gets like into this weird cave area, right? Is that what? Or he hears mm-hmm. Sarah Jane calling for him. But then it turns into singing when it's revealed that it's actually the Great One luring him there. Basically, the Great One's like, give me that crystal. I want that crystal. No White Castles, just crystals. And then she forces him to walk in a circle to just prove how much she means this.
And it's rare for us to see the doctor mentally overpowered. Usually he's the one that if anything mental is going on, the doctor's just laughing it off. Like, you know, oh, you get up your mind probe or whatever. It's like, no big deal, you know. So she talks about how you're not used to being afraid, are you, you know?
Yeah, the last time something like this happened where he actually did get overpowered or whatever, it was the Mind of Fear.
Yeah, the Mind of Evil.
Mind of Evil, right. Where it showed that everything the doctor was afraid of, which included the Zarbi.
And a war machine. We'll bring up even the most lame enemies from your pastor.
I've been reading some of the comic strips with the First Doctor and his 2 grandchildren. They bring back the Zarbi, like, at the drop of a pin. I think they thought that the Web Planet was going to be a bigger episode than it actually was.
Visually, though, it was impressive for its time. Us looking back on it now, it doesn't look so good, but at the time, it looked great.
Smearing Vaseline on a camera was high art.
It's one of the most expensive ones they had done to that point.
Well, the Monoptera costumes were great.
The Zarbi, not so much. They're just big ants that walk into the camera.
I really like the Optera.
But I want to say, though, next to the Daleks, that was the second bit of merchandising was the Web Planet with. They did have Zarbi and Monoptera stuff for sale. Yeah, they did see that as a new revenue stream, but it didn't withstand the test of time like the Daleks did.
They start meditating, right? The spiders make contact with them, and they all start... Basically, they're appearing in the cellar, but not on the mandala. They're appearing elsewhere so that they can sneak in, but nearby. And they're infiltrating the cellar. Tommy goes and talks to Choji. Nailed it. And Choji rushes in to stop the meditation. But the spiders shoot Choji and Yates.
But decide not to kill for some undisclosed reason.
Plot convenience. So then the villagers start attacking the spider lair, and Sarah Jane and the doctor get out. Well, actually, Sarah Jane finds the doctor, and they teleport to the TARDIS. She's like, I learned this from a spider. They taught me how to teleport.
I know, and the doctor's not suspicious at that moment, which I'm like, really?
They TARDIS out of there, and all of the meditators now have spiders on their backs.
Spider bro. Spider bro.
In my notes, I've started calling them the spider dudes, but I like the meditators better, so I'm gonna keep calling them that. The TARDIS arrives in the basement. All of the spider dudes start shooting lightning at the doctor and Sarah Jane, but Tommy comes in and saves the day. He gets shocked, but he's okay.
And I think that has to do with the fact that he's, like, pure of heart, and so it's like that negative mental energy is being used against him. There's nothing negative in him to, like, hurt, so I think that's what they're trying to get at there. Otherwise, it makes no sense.
Or, I mean, it could be that he's had so much of the blue crystal,
so much exposure to it.
Yeah, it makes him more immune. Maybe. And Tommy takes them to Choji. No, wait, no, they take him to...
Kanpo.
Yes. kind of same difference.
But you don't know that at this point. But yeah, he's the abbot of the monastery.
Who's been name dropped a lot, but we've never seen him until this point. And the doctor knows Tibetan, because of course he does. Tells him about the abbot about the crystal. And the abbot just keeps saying, like, man, you don't remember me, do you? Basically, just insinuating that they know each other. And meanwhile, Tommy faces off against the spider dudes. He leaves out, and there's like a showdown in a hallway. And they just keep shocking Tommy.
You know, an episode title for this would be Rise of the Spider-Man.
Ooh, nice.
I like that. I like it.
That's it. Tommy getting shocked a bunch is the end of episode 5. We're now into episode 6, the last one, which I've called Not Quite Dead.
I'm getting better.
This is the weirdest recap.
Right, because it's a recap plus new material that wasn't in the end of the last one.
Because we go back to before Spider Dudes. We see them, like, being under the influence of the spiders. One of them tries to run away, but the spider makes him not do it. And they're like, we want the crystal. Give us that crystal. And then they go up and they fight Tommy.
Right, and we see a lot of stuff between the doctor and the abbot that we didn't see the previous time before we see the recap of them shooting at Tommy.
It's like very weirdly edited. I feel like that's the first time that's ever happened.
I think that's correct, yeah. It's very rare, even beyond this. I think it might happen a few more times, but yeah, you don't normally see that.
I think there was a slight instance of it in the Time Warrior. They did a recap, but then put in just a shot or two of Sarah Jane and the Robin Hood guy.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I mean, it unintentionally happened a lot in the Hartnell era, where they had actually redo the scene from the first one, and it was different, but that wasn't intentional. That was just, well, we're reshooting it, so sometimes things are a little different.
I always love those cliffhangers where it's just them, like, holding a gun for the entire length of the credits. And I'm still being menacing!
We have to freeze while the titles are playing on the screen.
They don't do that anymore. Now it's just credits, and then we go to the show, and then the show ends, and then we go to the credits. There's no lingering shots. Title credits. Let's see. But the abbot has the crystal. Sarah Jane is acting very weird. And when the abbot says he has the crystal, Sarah Jane is all like, give me that crystal. I want that crystal. No White Castles, just crystals. She's gonna keep making that dumb joke.
Okie doke.
Wah, 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 wah.
And Sarah Jane is basically, you know, she's under the control of the spider. Shoots the doctor, but the doctor is trying to get her. Maybe she just shoots at the doctor. That could happen.
Oh, I think he still has his rock. That's why it doesn't hurt him. Right. Okay. Yeah. Cause I know he was still talking with her in that scene. So I'm like, did he get shot? I don't remember that. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. He had his rock.
That's when we go back to Tommy's recap. That's how much new stuff there is before we go back to the cliffhanger, which they just play the cliffhanger and that's pretty much it. I don't think there's anything new in that scene.
No, it's just Tommy taking the blasts and being all, ha ha ha, you can't hurt me.
But the doctor is basically talking to Sarah Jane, trying to get her to fight the spider, and the crystal helps too.
Mm-hmm.
She fights it off and the spider falls off of her back and dies.
Yeah, that I thought worked well, because like its legs fold up like a spider when it's dead and everything. I like that.
So the spider dudes are not making much progress with Tommy, so they start to chant.
Right, and they connect their fingers. It's the stupidest looking thing.
Just the tips.
They're doing a giant pinky swear and it gives them extra power.
That's how I've always known magic to work. But then the doctor sort of is talking to the abbot and's like, I guess I was greedy and I should have stole that crystal. This is all my fault.
Yeah, if you think about it, I mean, I really like this, that this whole story is about the fact that the doctor, you know, really needs to take a look at the way that he operates. Because, I mean, he's already had one person, like, just die because he brings him into this thing, doesn't pay any attention, and it's just like, oh, it's too bad, the guy died. But the whole idea of, you know, you just went to this place and took this thing just because, and the whole idea of he wants to keep it, he doesn't want the spiders to get their hands on it because it's his. It's kind of like, why not just let them have it, you know, being the solution to everything. I don't know, I just really like it. I like the sort of that it's teaching him something, that his character needs to grow, but also that it's just kind of like, you know, by being so possessive you're actually causing the problem, just let it go.
It's always nice when the doctor gets sort of knocked down a peg and then learns from it. Not just get knocked down a peg, but gross.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, that's been sort of an issue I've had with 3, is that sometimes he doesn't have that enough. He doesn't get sort of called out on.
Yeah.
He's always like the smartest person.
He's got flaws, but they're like not acknowledged by the narrative sometimes.
Right. And so it is nice that when it does happen, that he's not sort of just 100% right all the time, which they sometimes can do. But that's at this point that he figures out that the abbot is the hermit. And it's also the first time that we get regeneration is said. I mean, it's happened, but this is the first time it's been called regeneration.
I was gonna say, like, the first time it happens, it's like, I don't know, it was just a thing.
I got tired and fell down.
Right, he's like, I've been renewed, you know, but he doesn't really say anything about it, yeah.
Well, because, I mean, originally, part of the thought was that it might have been tied into, like, the energy from, like, Mondas and all that stuff, so, somehow.
So it's like, at this time, we've done it enough times that we have to say, like, it's a thing.
And it really contextualizes what happened with the second Doctor, too, because the Time Lords just kind of say, we're going to change your face, Doctor, so it doesn't really seem like it's all that bad of a thing. But here it's like they're talking about, you know, you become a completely different person, and they haven't put the limit on it yet, but it's like it's a bigger deal than just changing your face.
And we also find out that Choji is a a projection of the Abbot. So they are the same person. The Abbot is regenerated since the last time the Doctor saw him.
Yes.
Okay. But Choji is the projection.
Yes.
Okay.
And then becomes him when the Abbot dies and regenerates.
It's not something that comes up a lot, but we do see this again where, like, sufficiently advanced Time Lords can sort of project their future incarnation. It's kind of a weird thing, but yeah, it's not the only time we'll ever see that again.
So, okay, so that was what I was going to say about technically, the guy in yellow face is also, even in the show, potentially a guy in yellow face because he's actually a Time Lord.
Well, I mean, if a Time Lord is a different race or nationality or whatever, they just are.
Okay. I'm just trying to think it through.
Well, he's trying to pretend to be a human, and that's not, you know, that's not right.
Frankly, I find that offensive as a human.
Okay, so, Choji.
Woo! You got it.
Woo! Choji is helping Yates in the basement. The Abbot says some, like, you know, mysterious stuff to the Doctor, asking him what does he fear. The Doctor's like, there's no other way, and they're being very vague and mysterious about it. But the Doctor takes the crystal, and he's like, I gotta go take it to the Great One. But the cave will destroy him. What? There was some reason for it. Like, it will mess with his...
I think it's kind of like mental radiation.
Yeah, because they talk later about how all the cells in his body are being destroyed by being there.
I think it's, like, mentioned when he goes into the cave for the first time. Mm-hmm. The spider says it, and then he's like, well, I guess I'll have to go back and do that in order to defeat the spider. So Tommy keeps getting shocked, and Yates jumps in front of Tommy in a heroic sacrifice. Okay.
Sometimes Yates.
Okay, but, like, it wasn't hurting Tommy at any point.
Yates shows up on the scene and doesn't know that.
They, like, powered up. But apparently not enough, because Yates isn't quite dead either.
Well, he had compassion.
Right. Later, the Abbot says Yates' compassion saved him the same way that Tommy's purity had saved him. So, it was something... that's why I'm saying, I think this is all supposed to be, like, mental-based. And, well, no, because, I mean, the whole thing is, like, Buddhist, which is about, like, positive and negative energy, right? So, I think it's just the fact that, you know, that somehow positive energy, like, counteracted the negative or something like that. I think it's what they're going for with that.
Joe, explain the face you are making.
I just like don't
like
Yates.
You just ate a lemon.
You were hoping he died when he jumped in front, aren't you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
He made a heroic sacrifice to redeem himself.
Okay. If it had been bitten, it would have just bounced off him.
Oh my god. I just need a sometimes Yates from you.
Sometimes Yates, okay? Sometimes Yates.
You're so bitter about it.
So the Doctor disappears from the room, and the Abbot gets shot by spider dudes?
Well, now, is he not compassionate or pure?
He's lived too long.
He's had too many vices. And the Doctor appears in the cellar. TARDIS is out.
Yeah, and the door is wide open. I was like, what? Did he just leave the door open when he walked out before?
He's just careless. He leaves crystals laying around.
Yeah, it's a good thing the spiders didn't want the TARDIS, but I guess if they can travel in time and space anyway, it's not really that important.
The Doctor goes to talk to the villagers, and they're going to take him to the caves and show him the way, I guess. But the villagers, twist, take him to the spiders instead. They're under control of the spiders.
No!
The Doctor keeps falling for this trick. But the spider's like, give us the crystal. And he's like, I'm only going to give it to the Great One. Lupton is like, oh, I'm tired of this. And tries to just grab the crystal from the Doctor. But is stopped by the spiders. And they're like, we're just going to let him take it to the Great One. I mean, that's what we were going to do anyway. So
the spiders are like, why are you even still here, Lupton?
And Lupton just, like, goes off on, like, this, like, mad rant, like, oh, nobody does what I want, ah, I'm a salesman, ah, and then they They shoot him.
Well, yeah, he goes to smash the spider that had been on his back, and then they shoot him. He, like, raises his fist like he's gonna, like, smash it down on it.
And make a big gooey spider mess.
Ew.
We only hear that he was this great salesman from him. I gotta figure that a salesman who gets frustrated and starts hitting his clients...
That's why he got fired.
I know. I don't think he's that good of a salesman.
That's the real twist. He wasn't a great salesman. So, okay, so the abbot says that Yates is not quite dead and then fixes him a bit, which I guess uses up the rest of the abbot's energy, and he dies.
He regenerates.
And he regenerates into Choji.
Now, the guy who was formerly Choji is actually Kanpo.
fair enough. Kanpo? Does that character come back?
No.
Is that a Gallifreyan name?
I think that's a name he took on Earth, because I think it's supposed to be Tibetan.
The Hermit is probably a Gallifreyan name.
You need to have the definite article in there. The Hermit.
So the doctor goes to the cave, and he finds the Great One. And yeah, it's a giant spider. An actual giant spider.
Again,
pretty cool too.
They're pretty big spiders.
Pretty big, but they're not giant. This is a giant spider. Huge. And it needs the crystal for her awesome brain thing.
It's basically made out of crystals, a, like, thought transmitter thingy.
Right, it's supposed to, like, amplify her thoughts so that her will becomes reality.
Sort of like, what's his name? Emo guy in the Three Doctors.
Oh, Omega.
Emo guy.
Yeah, emo guy wasn't helping, but then you said Three Doctors, so.
But the doctor's, like, tries to warn her, don't do it, it will overload and be bad. The spider's like, don't believe you, and, like, teleports the crystal out of his hands into the machine, I guess. And it overloads. Surprise.
So really, if the doctor had just given the crystal at the very beginning, would have taken care of all of us.
Well, this would have been 5 episodes shorter. Well, probably 4, because there was a whole episode of just belly dancing and magician stuff.
Well, we definitely need that chase.
So 3 episodes shorter. But the spider council starts freaking out. The villagers are out from under the thrall, and they get out of there. The spiders fall off of the spider dudes, the meditators. The doctor gets away, and TARDIS is out. And then the mountain explodes, because we gotta have an explosion.
Yeah.
And then we jump forward in time a bit, Earth-wise, I guess.
Yeah.
Because the doctor has been gone for 3 weeks, and Sarah Jane has dropped by unit to talk to the brig about it.
Well, what I can't believe is that his lab is completely empty. Like, now all his stuff. And I'm like, the doctor's been gone for 3 weeks before, right? I mean, it's like, you guys have just been like, well, he went off to face the spiders and didn't come back. I guess he's dead. Seems a little harsh, because it's an empty room right now.
To be fair, he could have came back as soon as he left. He's got a time machine.
Right, but when does the doc... I mean, how often does he do that? I mean, usually he can't really control it right, so...
What's 3 weeks to him? Yeah.
I mean, the last time he was gone with Sarah and then they came back, it's like dinosaurs had invaded London. So you gotta figure that there were 3 weeks for that crisis and the evacuation and everything, you know, at least, so...
That's true. Well, they didn't. They were so busy with that they didn't have time to clear out his office. Or they
would
did,
have.
Or they did, and then he came back and they're like, oh shit, put it back. Go, go, go. Also, the brig sort of mentions that, you know, he'll probably come back. I remember one time he went away and he came back and he had a completely different face.
A little foreshadowing.
A little bit. And the doctor, TARDIS, is in, and he doesn't look good. And he says that he got lost in the time vortex. And then there's a callback, sort of, to Monster Paladin.
Oh, yeah.
When Sarah Jane thought he was dead, and she cried on him, and he woke up. Like, I ain't dead. And she's crying here, too. And there's also the line about where there's... Before she says...
Where there's life, there's hope.
Yeah. And that's what he says. He says, where there's life, there's... And that's all he says. He doesn't say anything else. That's how he goes. It's very sad.
It is. That's like good last words.
He's, like, doing some really good acting, too. Like, Jon Pertwee is. Like, he's selling the hell out of this thing.
I expect nothing less.
I gotta wonder how kids who watched back in the day felt. Because he was the doctor for 5 years, so you gotta figure he picked up kids watching that had never seen Troughton. And, you know, suddenly have, like, the doctor die, like, right in front of them. It's like, were they traumatized by this? Did they know that he would change? You know, I mean, how upsetting was this?
This is the first time that it actually feels like a death scene, too. Because the first one is just, I fell down and came back up as a different person. It didn't really feel so much like a death. The second one is off screen.
But it is a little violent.
The second Doctor one, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like off in that like weird void spinning around.
And like screaming and stuff.
Right, when he's putting the washer on spin cycle and his face starts stretching. Yeah, that part looks painful.
Yeah, this is the first one that's written like a goodbye, I feel like.
And then Kenpo shows up and just appears. Basically just like, I'm going to tell you guys about regeneration again, in case you forgot.
Well, the Brigadier needs to know.
Because he's very confused. I think even after the explanation, he's still like, I don't know.
Whatever.
Whatever.
It's some weird doctor shit. That's fine.
Well, they said that the reason they needed to happen in front of the Brigadier was so that they didn't have to go through yet another episode of the Brigadier denying that the new guy is the doctor and going through all that junk again. So they're like, this time we're going to do it in front of him. So he can't be like, I don't know about this guy.
Oh, that's right. It took him like 100 years to just be like, it's the doctor. Just accept it. Why are you still being so stubborn?
Did it in the, he did it the beginning of three, and he did it in the Three Doctors. But yeah, Kenpo helps him regenerate. Brick says, not again. And then he also is like, also heads up, he might be a little erratic and confused, so bye. And disappears. He regenerates, and we get Tom Baker.
Hey, we're here.
Yeah, it feels like when the Brigadier's like, here we go again, there's like a laugh track freeze frame, and then that was the end of the episode. That's our Brig.
They should have like a sitcom parallel of like what's going on behind the scenes at the same time as these episodes. And there would be a whole episode dedicated to Baby Benton.
It's called Family Unit.
It's called Family Unit? Oh, I love that. I'm pitching this to the BBC immediately. Or Big Finish. One of the two.
I think Big Finish is going to do your 50 Shades of Yates.
There's room enough for both. That could be an episode of The Family Unit, 50 Shades of Yates.
50 Shades of Yates doesn't belong in the Family Unit universe.
It's the Torchwood of Family Unit.
See, now I hear Nick Briggs' voice in my head going, new from Big Finish Productions, 50 Shades of Yates. I can't unhear it now. It's in my head.
Oh, okay. All right. So that is the end of Planet of the Spiders.
That is the end of an era.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for our final thoughts. And I'm going to play an ad for the 42 cast right here. So listen to it.
Yay!
Temporal anomaly detected on Earth 2017. Is it the Doctor? No, it is a human using the number 42. They have the ultimate answer. They are having civil discussions about television, film, comics, books, and video games. Where is the fan rage? This is a threat to the Daleks. We must exterminate them. Humans must be hostile to each other so that the Daleks may rule supreme. Exterminate! Exterminate! The 42 cast. Bad for Daleks, good for humanity.
Wasn't that a great ad we just listened to? I sure liked it.
Ooh, it's fantastic.
It's the best.
And we're back, so you know what time it is?
It is a little bit past 10, I think.
But also, it's time for
Final Thoughts!
Alright, so, Nathan, what are your final thoughts?
I absolutely adore the Pertwee era. This is always a bittersweet, a bittersweet story for me. But I kind of like the callbacks. You know, I like that even a lot of like the guest actors they had in this one were from previous stories. Even like the little touches that unless you kind of like look at the behind the scenes, you don't even realize that like Kismet Delgado was part of it and everything like that. I feel like it was a good finish for this series because, you know, I mean, the whole Doctor's era, they kind of had Buddhism as a subtext because a lot of the producer's thoughts were, you know, towards that, even though he says he wasn't a practicing Buddhist, that he was very interested in it. And so you find that a lot of that kind of mindset is in a lot of the stories. And so they finally just kind of do it like outright, like this is a story that's going to have Buddhism in it. So yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite of the Third Doctor's era, but it's got you. It's an Earthbound story mostly. It's got, the sci-fi angle. It's got evil corporations beating the man down through Salesman Lupton. You get a lot of those tropes in there. And Sarah Jane, I absolutely adore. I know most people think that the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane is a better team, but I like her a lot in these Third Doctor stories because I feel like she's feistier and comes off stronger in my mind in these ones. So love that. Yates is a throw-in, but they wanted to redeem him. We end on the Brigadier. So, you know, what more can you ask for? So, yeah, I really love this one.
Tony?
With the whole chase. First of all, it's amazing. The fact that it's like, we're in a car chase. We're in an airplane chase. We got a hovercraft and a boat. Great. Amazing. Perfect, like, love letter to this era of Doctor Who. And, like, really takes time to, like, highlights all the stuff about this era that's so great. And, you know, there are some big-ass spiders. What more could you ask for? That's it. Surprisingly few thoughts.
Overall, I enjoyed the serial. I mean, I do think there's a lot of stuff that's like, this is quintessential three, which is a good thing to have in your last three serial. I do feel like there is a bit of a problem where the best episode is the second episode. I kind of wish they'd save the chase for, like, later on, because it's, like, a big action, pumped-up scene. And then after that, the pace dies off a lot. I kind of didn't care at all for any of the stuff on the actual planet of the spiders, because it felt a little bit too much like older classic Who stuff of, like, the stereotypical, we're going to a village and there's these two people that I don't like and we gotta get the villagers to riot against the bad guys on the planet, is the same problem I had with the Time Monster, where the Time Monster was great and fun, and then we went to Atlantis and for a whole episode I'm like, what happened? We're in a completely different serial now, and I feel similarly about this with the spiders. Other than that, I enjoyed it. It was a really good send-off. 4-3. Like, his regeneration scene is really, really good. Yeah, it's definitely not the best serial, but it's also, like, a nice sum up of 3. It's got a bit of everything.
It's a good send-off.
It's a good send-off, yeah. I'm sad to see him go.
But we'll be doing our 3 special next.
Yeah, we'll talk more about 3 overall in our next episode and our what we feel like might be going on with 4. All right, so before we go, Nathan, is there anything you would like to plug?
So just go to 42cast.com or check it out on Stitcher Radio or iTunes, or you can go to the Facebook group, which is 42cast.com/Facebook, or you can tweet to us at 42cast. Check us out. We will actually have a Doctor Who episode coming up soon, so that kind of ties into this, but if you're just interested in random geekery, check us out. We cover all kinds of stuff.
What's the episode specifically covering?
I'm starting a series on Get to Know Your Doctor, and so the first one will be on William Hartnell.
Ooh, nice. Oh, cool. If you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com, and also be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes.
We just found a lot of secret iTunes reviews that we didn't know existed. So thank you, people from outside of the U.S.
Specifically, the 5 of you from Great Britain who we didn't know reviewed our podcast. Thank you. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssalon.com/support. And there you will find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, and live streams of us watching the episodes, which has been a lot of fun.
I've been enjoying doing those a lot. It's a higher level on the Patreon, but we occasionally will do something where we'll post and we'll say, like, the first person to comment on this, we'll send a link to. So even if you donate at, like, the $1 level, there's still a chance to get links. And we've got a lot of fun, like, landmark stuff to watch coming up.
Be sure to check that out. And also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's Tumblr's without an E because it's Tumblr. And tune in next time when we do a look back at the Third Doctor. We'll do our top, or what do you call it, the Sweet 16?
Sweet 16.
Do a Sweet 16. We'll talk about the companions and the monsters and all that good stuff. See you then. Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye and I love you.
Keep calm and wrestle on. Oh, that's funny.
Ah, that hasn't happened yet. That's what replaced Rassel Awesome.
You can say it.
It's been Rassel Awesome.
I told you it was going to take off.
Well, here we go again.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.